right, fabulous listeners, are you ready for a two-parter of two-parters, the two-parterists of two-parters that you've ever two-parted? Well, it's your goddess, Chanel Perillo, and welcome back to Shut Up Chanel, the podcast where we dive deep into my journey within the LGBTQIA plus community, celebrating the individuals who have not only influenced me, but have become integral parts of my story. Today, we've got a true inspiration. No joke. My family, my heart, the one and only Kiki Extravaganza. Kiki is a phenomenon and a fixture in West Hollywood known for her iconic mask and legendary presence. As a proud member of the legendary House of Extravaganza, Kiki has taken the drag world by storm. Beyond her stage persona, she's a talented wardrobe stylist, performance artist, and master rhinestoner, making her mark both on and off the stage. Join me, Chanel Perillo, as we embark on an extraordinary journey through Kiki's life and career. We'll dive into her beginnings, her rise to stardom, and the incredible impact she's had on the world of drag and beyond. Kiki was recently christened as a saint by the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence Los Angeles chapter, and her tireless work as an advocate continues to inspire and uplift everyone around her. To know Kiki is to fucking love her. So, darlings, grab your favorite beverage, get comfortable, and let's dive into this fabulous conversation with Kiki Extravaganza. Stay tuned next week for part two, as this is an episode that you are not going to want to miss. And remember, stay connected with us on social media for all the latest updates and exclusive content. Join the conversation on Instagram at Shut Up Chanel Pod. Watch our captivating videos on YouTube at Shut Up Chanel Pod. And please go to Patreon to unlock full episodes at Shut Up Chanel. And stay fabulous, my darlings. Let's get into this episode. Welcome to the stage, Kiki Extravaganza.
Shut up, Chanel. Shut up, Chanel.
Welcome to the stage, Kiki Extravaganza. Kiki Extravaganza.
I love you, Chanel.
Oh my God, what do I owe the honor? You look amazing.
Oh, thank you, dude. This is just my house clothes.
I'm glad I caught you. I'm glad I caught you at home. But would you mind if unmasking for me for this interview?
Okay, that was not in the contract, Chanel. Oh, okay.
Please. Okay. The world, this is Kiki unmasked.
Okay, this is a before. Coming. Oh my God, where is my sunglasses? I can't see. Oh, they're there.
Oh, a transformation.
Yes, girl, from male to female to male, girl.
Oh, the real Kiki before us, as I live and breathe West Hollywood. This is the gorgeous, gorgeous man yes. Behind the mask.
Yes, yes. I threw Kiki in here a little bit.
Okay. Oh my God. Well, welcome to Shut Up Chanel.
Oh, thank you for having me. I've heard so much that I was like, oh my God. And when you asked me to be on it, I was like, oh my God, I've never talked about myself. But for you, one of my besties, family members, chosen family, I said, let me do this just in case I'm not promised tomorrow. So I was like, let me do this. It'll be the only time. So you get it.
I got the exclusive.
Exclusive, honey.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. I've been waiting to interview you, Ed, because I knew that it was, I knew I was going to have to like beg a little bit, but I do. I think it's so important for people to hear your story because I feel like you have been a fixture in West Hollywood for decades, some may say now.
I've lived in WeHo for 30 years. Kiki came around going on 14 in September, 14 years of Kiki in West Hollywood. So I took over. I'm now the queen.
Before we go into how we met, How did, for like everyone that doesn't know, like how did the mask come about?
Oh, wow. Okay, that's a good question. Okay, I'm a wardrobe stylist during the day. Like, that's my job since I was 19 years old. My first gig was Janet Jackson, That's the Way Love Goes. The stylist asked me, I need an assistant to dress all my dancers. Like, okay. So anyways, we'll talk about that later. I was on set doing Fergie-licious wardrobe for all the background. And one of the characters, which was my idol, Lee Bowery,
Wow.
was a character in the video. He's not alive, or he wasn't alive, but they wanted a Lee Bowery character in the video. So I was the only one on set because I went around and I was like, what size are you? What size? I was the only one that fit the damn outfit. So I put on this 50-pound dress full of candy, hanging, hanging, hanging. And I said, well, I'm not showing my face. So they put some, I put like three different fishnet stockings over my face, big sunglasses, motorcycle helmet, and an orange wig coming out. Then they said, here's two hula hoops. Go out there. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Thank God I knew how to Vogue. So I started doing my thing. So we did it. So then Fergie comes over and says, hey, you're amazing. You need to do this all the time. And I'm like, I go, okay, well, if I did, what would I call myself? She said, Kiki. So Fergie is my drag mother, or my performance artist mother. She named me Kiki, and the rest is history because all the clubs were like, we want Kiki, we want Kiki. And I was like, holy shit, what did I start? And here we are 14 years later, living a double life.
You are one of the hardest working women in West Hollywood, I must say. And I didn't even, I feel like I kind of knew this story and I knew the connection with Fergie, but I for some reason, like I thought that Kiki had been part of the House of Extravaganza for forever.
No, that came out. No, I was Hector Extravaganza in the ballroom during the early 90s when Paris is Burning came out, when Madonna's Vogue came out. That's when I really got into voguing. And Mother Carmen, rest in peace, she just passed away this last year. And my father, grandfather Hector Extravaganza, they're both Hall of Fame icons in the ballroom scene, are the ones that said, you have key, extravaganza running in your blood. You're extravaganza. You don't need to walk a ball. So they deemed me extravaganza in 92 or 93. And
The
then I
rest
did
is
the,
history.
yeah.
Well,
And
let's
then,
take it back a little bit. And I'm going to go in a little bit of a timeline because you've lived like such an amazing life and I want to make sure that we don't leave anything out so that the listeners know like our connection and kind of like where we came into each other's lives. I remember how we met. How do you remember how you and I met?
oh, you were drunk, laid out on the floor at a club. No, I'm just kidding. No,
It's
it
not true.
I know. I like to t I'm very sarcastic, by the way. It was my birthday party. I had Detox. I had Alexis Arquette. I had a few performers perform for my birthday party, and you showed up. And then that's how I remember meeting you.
And there's that iconic photo of me, you, Raya, and Detox. Detox is dressed as Cher because she performed Cher for you
Yeah,
that
she did
night.
share.
And I
Yeah.
had just met, that was okay, but so that's not You'll have to tell me if my timeline's off, because I have another memory of the first time I met you. And then I remember your birthday party. I remember where it was. I remember that night. And I remember, like, that's when that was the first night Raja invited me somewhere. And I felt like I had finally got her as a friend because I wanted to be her friend so bad. But I remember her inviting me to that party that night. My first memory of you was right after Drag Race. Raja, like, knew she had won, but, like, we couldn't tell anyone because this is before they did multiple crownings.
Yeah, because of her.
Because of Raja. And because... I remember her being like, I really want to go out in WeO tonight. Mickey's is going to throw me, like, a secret party upstairs, like, you should come. And so I went with her, and I remember, like, it was my first time out in WeHo with her, and everybody knew who she was. And we got, like, walked upstairs to Mickey's, and or no, not upstairs, to, like, the back where, like, the stages, and they turned that into, like, tables,
couches.
And there were, like, sheets hung up so we could be, like, private. And I remember it was, like, me, you, Dirty Diana, and they were like, this is Kiki. And that was the first night I met you. It was, like, right after Raja left Drag Race.
Raja is my soulmate, my best friend, my everything. She is my inspiration. So her and G Extravaganza and Marco, it's a funny thing. They're all born in the same week of June.
Isn't that crazy?
And they're all just beyond inspiring. Like, they just are, they inspire me to create my character and my things. But yeah, they're I love them.
Oh, I love you. I'm, like, not making me cry, like, 5 minutes in. Okay. Well, let's take it back. I want you to take me back to the beginning, Kiki. Where were you born? What kind of family did you have growing up? Like, paint a picture for me.
Okay, I came from a well-off family because my mom was the best wig maker, ventilator, like, where you get each hair and put it through the needle and the lace and tie a knot. Mm-hmm. So she was the best. I've woken up at my house with Carol Burnett, Liz Taylor, Frank Sinatra, Cher in my kitchen. And I'm like, for me, celebrity has never fazed me because I grew up in that celebrity world.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, I started dancing. I was a dancer. And that was my form of release because I'm gay and I couldn't let people know. And I didn't come out till at least 17, 18 years old. But during that time, I did a lot of dancing competitions. I was on American Bandstand, Soul Train, Solid Gold. I did all the TV shows.
What? Wait a minute. Okay. Before you, let's pause for a second. I want to play. Okay. So was it just you and your mom growing up?
No, my dad was there, but he was very abusive.
Okay.
And so my mother and him split up at 16, when I was 16. And that's when the world opened for me, because my mom knew. I was trying to tell her. She's like, oh, you don't need to tell me, child. I know.
That's what I was getting at. I was like, did you come out to your mom first?
Yeah, I was going to, but she already knew. So I was like, there goes that. But anyways, our dad left. It was me and my sister living in this big house in Northridge. And I moved out at 17. I had a car already. And I was, you know, I'm a workaholic. Like, my first job was working at the California Mart, repping a showroom, a clothing line of one of my really good friends, Carl Logan. He was California Designer of the Year, year after year.
So you were born in California to
no, East? No, no.
No, because that's why you're talking about. So did you, and what brought you to California then?
Oh, my mom and dad brought us. I was only 2 years old.
So since you were born in
Colombia, Cali, Colombia.
Cali, Colombia. And
South
then your
America.
South America. And then your family migrated to California when you were 2 years old.
Yep. And then my dad started a business. He's a dentist. And then he had a restaurant and he had several buildings that he owned. And my mom was doing her wig thing and dressing everybody. I mean, her last project. Oh, now I'm going to cry.
It's okay, breathe.
Her last project was Michelle Obama. During her press, when she was first lady, she was working on her wig when she passed. But it's a wonderful memory. But
no, that's where I'm at with grief now, is I'm always gonna cry when I talk about my dad now. Like, it just,
yeah.
It's crazy how, like, right now, I just even thinking about him, I could start bawling.
Yeah.
But it remind I saw this quote recently that was like, grief is a reminder of, it's like unused love that you have for a person. So it's like,
Yeah.
every time you cry, like, it's like, it's just like the love that you have for your mom.
Yeah, there's no other love. You can't compare the parent love to any kind of other love. That's the one that hits the hardest, you know, especially when they have to, you know, go to the other side. But
And
okay.
your mother, I'm so sorry, Keeks.
Yeah, but she went quick and she went her own way. She said, hey, I'm not going to the hospital. I'm going to sit right here. And she, in 1 week, she was out, you know? And I respected her for that. I remember calling the ambulance and saying, please take her to the hospital. And my mother in the background screaming, if they take me, I'll never talk to you again. And I was like, okay, don't take her. Don't take her. So
yeah,
I,
my dad refused to be in a hospital too. He was like, I want to be in my house with my kids.
Yeah. And then I, when I arrived to, when I got the call that she's about to go, I remember driving up and there was like birds circling my house, her house. And I'm like, what is that? And I believe that it was the spirits or the, they were taking her.
Her
It was
soul.
Yeah, it was time to go. But yeah.
Wow, that's beautiful. Yeah, we're changing the subject.
Okay.
We're almost out of childhood. So, family moved you to California. You became a dancer. You,
yeah.
So that was in you. You were born a dancer. What kind of dancer were you, Kiki? I mean,
Oh,
you are still a dancer every night
yeah.
of the week in West Hollywood, but what trained dancing are you?
Disco hustle with couple dancing, da, 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 throwing up in the air. Oh, you could see my thing on YouTube. I
Oh,
danced
perfect.
for
Yeah, I want to see these videos.
I danced for Toni Braxton, Unbreak My Heart. It was the number one song at the MTV Awards. Chris Rock was the host, and it was 10 couples. And it was all boy, girl, except for me and Louis Extravaganza, my brother. And so we've already been hustling all our lives. And, you know, we did this thing and the rest is history. Chris Brown even said, oh, my God, I actually saw two men dancing together. Did you guys see that? Yeah, we were the first ones to dance on stage, living our fullest gay life. And I loved it.
What was Soul Train like?
Oh, it was so awesome because, okay, when we first moved here, I lived in Inglewood. So I went to 54th Street School and all the girls were like my best friends. So they're the ones that taught me how to, you know, have the moves, like, you know, so I got some black in me and I was like, yes. And that's what started the whole movement of my dancing because I always wanted attention, but dancing was my attention. Like that was my saving grace. When I had family parties, I was there dancing Latin salsa. And when I was at a white girl party, I was over there doing my little, you know, I learned all forms of dance and I'm blessed to have that in me.
How long did you, so we're in California. It's what, the 70s?
Yeah.
It's the 70s,
late 70s.
late 70s going into the 80s, because it's like disco, Soul Train. What was Los Angeles like during that time?
Oh God, it isn't like it is now that you could walk around with pink hair or be fabulous. It was very conservative. It was just, a straight world. I didn't have any gay friends. I didn't know what gay was. It was like, it was sad. For me, it was sad because it was like, God, I wish I could, but I can't because, they'll beat you up. Do you know how many times I landed in garbage cans because I was being gay at school, in elementary school? But then we moved to Northridge and it was a little bit easier. I went from an all black to an all white school. There was never any Latinos anywhere. So it was hard for me to identify. But yeah, so I was living
Who
in Northridge.
did you look up to at that time? Like who were your references? Who did you have to
Well,
look up
we
to?
didn't have we didn't have computers or phones. I looked at my LA Weekly and my little newspapers and Vogue and whatever. But the ones that really shone a light on me were the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. They were like these nuns with makeup, and I was like, I can relate to that. Like that was a pivotal moment for me because I never seen that. Oh, and I also later on in life I dressed Little Richard, and he taught me a lot about the lady boy. What did he call it? Yeah, I think it was we're all lady boys. And I was like, oh, okay, that's how we called gay people back then. We were lady boys. Not now they call lady boys trans and drag queens or male to female.
You've seen like a whole evolution of it. And that's so crazy you bring up Little Richard. Raja got me into that documentary and it was so good. And they would always tell him to shut up too.
Yeah, he was a okay, so then after the showroom thing. Oh, let me just say one thing about the showroom thing. I was
But
working
what is
at
the
the,
show? Wait, hold on. Okay. Before we go to the showroom thing,
because that was early 90s. That was my
that
first
was
job.
early 90s. So yeah, so you're dancing in LA, you're doing the circuit on all the dance shows. American Bandstand must have been crazy. But again, like you were kind of set up for this your whole life. Like you had been around celebrities. Like this is like, was your mom surprised that you were getting into everything that you were getting into?
Yeah, she was so proud. She's like, and she was a seamstress. So she would make every outfit for me and my partner, and we would go out, win $500, and I'd give my mother $100, and I'd be like, oh my God, thank you so much. But she was a part of the whole, okay, I'm doing this ballroom thing, or I'm doing this Latin thing, or I'm doing this pop lock and da da da. So she helped me style myself, like,
Yeah, and you were like a sponge, like soaking it all up since you were a
oh,
little kid. So you're a after so while you're dancing, you get a job at a showroom.
And this was right out of high school. I didn't want to be any kind of pressure or burden on my mother, and I said, no, I'm gonna go work. So I got a job at the showroom, Island Huang. I don't remember the name of the showroom, but one of my best friends was a designer there, and that's how I got the job because he's like, oh, come work at the showroom. So I did. And that was still before, this was early 90s, and it was still before social media. And Cher calls, because in the ad, we had an ad in the LA Style magazine, and Cher calls and says, hey, I would like to come in and make an appointment to view the collection. And I said, well, it's wholesale. It's like you need to be a store owner. And then she's like, well, I'm Cher. I'm Cher, like Sonny and Cher? Yes. And I'm like, oh my God, I met you when I was a kid. Yeah, come on over. So she comes up, shows up, spends over $30,000 worth of clothes. And this is wholesale prices. And so she's like, hey, can you do me a favor when the everything is ready. Can you drop it off at my house? And I go, me? And she's like, yeah, you. I love you. And I was like, okay. So when everything got ready, I went to her house in Benedict Canyon, this huge mansion. And it was just me and her in the entire house. And I was, she said, come in. And I walk in, and then she's like, meet me in the atrium. At that time, I didn't know what an atrium is. So
say. You're like the pool.
Yeah. So I have all these clothes and I'm walking through every room. And then I see this room. It's like the living room with a bunch of furs, like animal furs, cat, bears, zebras, tigers. And I go, this must be the atrium. So I sat my ass down, and then she's calling out for me, Hector, where are you? And I was like, I'm in the atrium. She's like, no, you're not. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm over here. Blah. So she's the one that taught me what an atrium is. It's the center of the house with no ceiling. And it's like, you know, trees are growing or whatever. So,
and that natural light coming in, right? Like glass windows.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
it's like enclosed in glass is what yeah. I imagine an atrium is.
Yeah. And so she brought a bottle of wine. She had a robe on and poured me a glass and got naked and started trying on all her clothes. And I was just like, wow, I'm hanging out with Cher. This is like pretty fucking amazing. I took it all in. I mean, she was most loving. And I was a big fan because of the Sonny and Cher show. And knowing that my mom's wigs were on her on the show, I'm like, oh, I remember that wig. Oh, I remember that wig. You know, that kind of, it was a wonderful moment for me. I'll never forget it. I was like, wow, full circle. So.
And how old are you? You were like 20?
Yeah, I would say, yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's
yeah.
So amazing. Would you say that was your first time like dressing a celebrity? Was that your first taste of like dressing
yeah.
a celebrity?
Yeah.
Cher, yeah. Your first one.
Yeah.
You started off strong.
Yeah. And then I started from there, I left the showroom and started working at rather not mention because they're all awful. But it's one of the highest. And it's like a Maxfield, like high-end boutique on Sunset Plaza. I worked there for 10 years, never got a raise. I went from sales to the window displaying to create the looks. And then all the celebrities were there. And that's how I met so many. That's how I met Little Richard, James Brown, Steven Tyler, Babyface. I mean, it was just... Every day there was another celebrity. Oh, and Janet. Janet would come in there and pull a bunch of stuff. And, you know, and I met her before That's the Way Love Goes because she came in as a client first.
Well, that's what I was
going to
say. So as you were like, were you kind of, you were building your relationship with these like celebrities during the time. So then when they got, you know, got to needing wardrobe for music videos and stuff, they would call you.
Yes. And, they would even fly me out in their Lear jets to go tie Sam Kennison, a big comedian back in the day, would fly me to Vegas to wherever he was playing so I could tie his tie. And I'm like, I've taught you how to tie your tie so many times. Like, why? So I would do it. He would pay me a lot of money and I would go in, tie his tie, and then fly back the same day. And I'm like, okay, part of life. Because I had to go to work the next day. But that was another, like, oh, and I used to hang out with Pauly Shore. Pauly Shore. I don't know if you remember him.
He still works out at Equinox on Sunset. I see him all the time at the gym.
His mom owned the comedy.
Yeah, they still do, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah. And so we became really good friends. And we'd share rides together to Vegas, and oh my God, the parties that they would throw. I'd be like, I'm okay. I don't go that hard.
Tell me about
go.
Your craziest night with, what was the craziest night you had with Pauly Shore? Take me there.
Ooh, I can't.
You don't want to out him. It's fine. We can move
no,
on.
No, no, no. they would take over the whole floor of the hotel, wherever they were staying at. And they would bring all the girls. I hire all the, you know, the
and
girls.
This is when he was like thriving, like Encino Man days. Like he was all like, for those listening, like Pauly Shore was a heartthrob. Like girl, like he was a hot little thing.
And he had like five girls on each side and walking down the hall naked, going to another room, doing a bunch of drugs. And I was just like, I haven't gotten into drugs yet. But yeah, that was pretty crazy. Pauly was out of his mind, literally. I would be like, wow. Like he would come into the store on Sunset to say hi. And then he'd always offer me, you know, drugs. And I'm like, I'm working. I don't do that, you know? But
He seems like he's got his life together now, you know? We all were party girls back in the day.
Oh, yeah, of course. Steven Tyler almost got me fired from the store that we were talking about, because he walked in and I was getting him some clothes or outfits or whatever. And in front of my boss, he's like, oh, you're high. And I'm like, no. He's like, your eyes are glassy. And I'm like, well, I didn't sleep very well last night. But meanwhile, on my lunch break, I always smoked a little bit of weed because the pressure of working in that store was a lot. We carried Terry Mugler, we carried Jean-Paul Gaultier, we carried Mark Margiela, Balenciaga. We carried the top of the line, and this was back in the 90s.
And the pressure working in retail in the 90s was next level.
Yeah, it was.
I don't think it's like that anymore, but I've heard horror stories about retail in the 90s.
Yeah, it was, but it was also a lot. Everybody had money.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wanted to spend money, and it was always like, you know, a baby face came in, and we'd always shut the store down when somebody famous wanted privacy. Oprah Winfrey and Gail came in another time, and we shut the store down, and they would spend over $30,000-$40,000 on wardrobe. I dressed Oprah for her show when she did her Oprah show. She was like, I need three looks. So I'd put these three looks together, and of course she'd buy some other stuff. And then when I see her wearing it on the TV, I'll be like, oh, she wore it just like I told her to wear it. You know, those moments I'll live in my heart forever, because I got to dress so many people that are celebrities. For me, they're just normal clients, people. But, you know, for them to acknowledge my art was beyond. And
favorite project you ever worked on early in the day, like when you were younger?
I was working at the store, and Tanya, Janet Jackson's stylist, walked in, and she's like, oh my God, I really need your help, because I knew her. Have you ever styled before? And I go, no, but I know how to dress mannequins. She's like, okay, I need to dress all the dancers for this video that I'm doing. And I was like, okay, do you have a car? And I was like, yeah, I have a car. So I put together a bunch of stuff, and I go, who's this for? And she's like, oh, I can't tell you. It's top secret. I'm like, okay. So I show up to the set, and I'm in a room with Janet Jackson, and Janet is there. And I'm like, hi. Oh my God. Do you remember me from the store? And she's like, yes. Oh, da 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 da. Okay. So I dress everybody. J-Lo's first ever, before in living color, before anybody even knew who the hell she was.
When she was Jenny on the Block.
Oh yeah, before all that. Before she was even a singer. That was her first gig, was dancing back up for Janet in that video.
That's right.
And I got to dress her, and okay, so we dressed everybody, and it was a 3-day shoot, and we're talking until 4 a.m. And another little story that's intertwined. Her boyfriend at the time, her husband, Hector Elizondo, Janet, was very controlling. He was like a fucking psycho freak. So
we always date our fathers, don't we?
Absolutely. So then she she was by herself in the trailer, and I had to go and do some. But back then we don't have phones, so I had a Polaroid around my neck because that's how I would take pictures of the outfits continuity. So anyways, I had the camera and I was like, Janet, do you mind if I take a picture? She's like, no, not at all. So we took a picture. An hour later, I guess she told her husband that we had taken a picture. At 6 a.m., I'm getting a phone call from production. You need to return that picture right now or else. Da, 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 da. And I'm like, it's
and
a
this
damn
is just a Polaroid.
Just a Polaroid. So I said, okay, you're going to make me drive all the way from West Hollywood to Inglewood to return this picture when my call time is 8 a.m. the next morning, right? So my smart ass drives to fucking Kinko's and makes 40 copies of them. I was like, fuck you, bitch. I'm a faggot. So I went and I returned the picture, and the rest is history. I was like, well, I did that. I just wanted a picture with Janet. Like, you know, she doesn't mind. And she's, you know, she signed a bunch of my clothes, and she's just a wonderful human being, period. Love her, her soul, everything about her.
Oh, I've always felt a connection to Janet Jackson. I really have. No, like
the song 1814, when she does five, four, three, two, that the pants that everybody was wearing, that was me. Pleasure Principle, when she's like jumping over a chair and it's her doing all that, was my outfit. So yeah, I didn't style her, but she did come into the store and buy that, so I get a little credit for that, right?
Of course you do. That's fucking amazing. Would you say that like what would you say was your big break
as a stylist? Was Janet.
Was because, Janet.
Yeah, and then working at that store, I turned the tables around and started my own clothing line.
So that's what I was going to ask. I was going to ask, like, when the shift from you leaving you leaving that store that we will not name, how did that come about?
Well, I got fired because I was selling my collection. From doing windows and all that, I became a buyer. And then I became assistant buyer, and then I became the buyer.
Well, that's amazing. And you didn't go to school for that. They made you the buyer.
Yeah, because I put together outfits so well, and I was one of the best salespeople that they ever had. I'm good at what I do. Whatever I set my mind to, I get the job done. So I started a clothing line because I knew what people wanted, but we couldn't find it anywhere. So me and my partner that worked there as a buyer as well, we said, let's do a clothing line. And since we're the buyers, we could buy it for the store.
So
we
smart.
we started Nude, NUGE. And because I sold at H. Lorenzo, every door opened. I was flying to New York to Park Avenue. I was going to Bal Harbour. I was Chicago, all the best stores. I was in all the best stores. And that's how the second chapter of my life moved into, you know, the late 90s. Then all of a sudden I had Britney Spears, Courtney Love, Christina Aguilera. I mean, the list is endless. They would call and say, oh my God, I really want some of your clothes. And
this was like the TRL days or before that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you're saying Britney, Christina.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
my
yeah.
my mind's going to like
yeah when they when
the
they
late,
were at
the late 90s, early 2000s, or when they were at their height.
That's when I had my collection. My collection was from the 1997 through 2006. I'm gonna say almost 10 years.
What a time. And isn't that crazy that that era is what's back in fashion right now? Like that exact era, like 96 to early 2000s, like that is what people are wearing now again.
Yeah.
You should bring back nude.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Right?
I still have the patterns.
I think you even gave me a couple of pieces from your original collection I have.
Yeah,
they're fucking amazing. The quality is great.
Yeah, it was very well priced and it was sold like pancakes. I was like, wow.
This is crazy. I never knew this about you. Okay, so you're in LA. You start this company with your partner. It goes fucking amazing. You're going to New York. You're dressing all of like the it girls at the time. You get fired in the middle of this. And then what happened?
Oh, because I got too famous. let me show you. I have what killed me. Okay. Can you see this?
Yes, this is your press clippings book. Oh my God. I had that on my wall. That Britney picture.
Okay. But wait. I'm talking about this article.
Show me. What's it called?
In
Nude.
Cosmopolitan. The Nudist Colony. And they show all the celebrities that wear my clothes. And it was an article about my clothing.
Read that. And no, that's so crazy because like I had a subscription to Cosmo since fifth grade. And
oh my God,
read that for sure.
Okay. So my boss walks in with the magazine and to the store. And he's like, is this you? I'm like, no, is this Hector Franco and Rona? And I was like, yeah, we did that. And he's like, well, this is your last day. Because he didn't want us to be successful.
Well, Kiki, that is also such a badass like punk rock story. Like you created a whole secret clothing line. We're flying to New York, dressing celebrities, got an article in Cosmo magazine.
Oh, and I had in Vogue, I was the trends that are coming in, I was always pictured there. I mean, I could show you all the in every fashion magazine, I was up in it. And that to me was like opened all the doors to every store and to every celebrity. I made my second room here in my apartment, my showroom. So a lot of celebrity stylists would come and pull from me. And that's when Ariana Phillips, which is still Madonna's stylist, started styling Courtney Love as well. Now, do you guys remember the 30-year anniversary of Rolling Stone? Let me show you.
I would if you show me a picture because I had a Rolling Stone. Yes, I remember that photo. It says, okay, for those listening, it's the 30th anniversary Rolling Stone cover, and it's called The Women of Rock. And on the cover is
Tina Turner,
Courtney Love, and
Madonna.
Wow.
So Courtney is wearing my dress in that picture. My dress that I designed. So that's how Madonna found out about my clothing line. And she's hit me up like a few days after that and said, I need to get some of your clothes. Da, 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 da. And it was funny because she had a song back in the day said, if Madonna calls, I'm not here. Or I don't remember how the song went, but that's the message I had on my phone. It said, hi, this is Madonna. Please give me a call. And I'm like, right, it's Madonna. I didn't believe it. Okay, so
I remember that.
So Ariana is the one that introduced my clothing line to the girls. So they're the ones that would hit me up whenever they had some shoot. Madonna hit me up for Christmas and said, I want to dress all the girls in my office in your wardrobe. So I sent her a huge box and, you know, that's history. Like, that's just a moment in my time that I'm like, okay. Because for me, celebrity isn't, it doesn't faze me. Like, I'm like, just a normal person. Just like when I used to hang out with RuPaul at Peanuts and before RuPaul, and she would sit next to me and we'd watch a show. Okay, but
yeah, famous people are just typically a little bit more interesting than the average person, which is why I've always liked celebrities. Is there's something about hanging out with someone that, you know, has got themselves to a level of fame that they're usually just interesting. There, it's nothing that like separates them from anyone else. And to you, you looked at them as the people that you work with, your peers, your clients, the people that inspire the rest of the world. And so you get to dress them and change the world.
Yeah, one outfit at a time, honey. Yes, girl.
Yes. So you get the cover of Rolling Stone. Then what happens?
And I got a bunch of other covers with Britney, People Magazine.
I bet I've seen all of them.
The photographer, David LaChapelle.
Of course. Well, yeah, I met him through Raja and Matthew back in the day. They were the ones that educated me on David LaChapelle, and then I studied all of his work.
Yeah, so he shot Britney for Rolling Stone.
That was the controversy that started it all. That was like her big I'm not a little girl, I'm a woman moment with the Teletubby where she's laying there with the bra and the underwear. Was that David LaChapelle?
Yeah, but also, do you remember her with the tricycle?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little pink top and white shorts.
Yeah, was that you?
That was me.
Wow. Yep. So did you, and so you out of you were brought on by Britney's people to dress her for that?
No, she was, she would hit me up on my phone. Like,
Britney
would? Hey, I have this shoot tomorrow with People Magazine. Can you send me a few pieces? Sure. And I'd send Messenger, whatever. But she'd always call me from a restaurant. Hey, come over here. We're having tacos. I'm like, oh, I'm working or I'm doing this. But I really never got to really get close to her like that. We were always talk on the phone, but she always called me for wardrobe. Like, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And I could, you know, I have a gazillion pictures of her in my clothing. For me, it was like, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because that was my golden ticket to when I go to a store that I really wanted to be in. Mm-hmm. And be like, oh, I dress this. This is my clothing. And of course, then they give you the attention because, you know, you dress Madonna or you dress Courtney or you dress, you know, celebrity. You got to throw those names out.
Yeah, it's like you're helping them, but they're also helping you leverage your brand to another level.
To another level, honey. It was beyond what I ever dreamed of. You know, my dreams are small, but they end up blowing up and you're like, well, this is my destiny. This is my life. And I just follow my heart and my destiny. And for me to say my entire life, I have been able to live off of my art, not working at Subway or, you know, a sandwich. You know, I've always worked for myself, through myself and my art, either styling, dancing, and now, music videos. Oh my God, the music video part. Aaliyah.
Yeah, that was next on my list. I want to talk about your connection with Aaliyah.
She is, I can't even explain. She was just a shining spirit. Okay. So Charlene was her wardrobe stylist. They had gone to, that was the end. There was the video where she has she's in a cave with a hawk. So Charlene had hit me up and said, hey, Kiki, why don't you come down on set and hang out and da-da-da? Because she'd always be at my house pulling clothes for all kinds of videos. And so I did. I was like, oh, yeah, I want to hang out. So I was there, and I happened to have this collection. While I was repping my clothing line, I met this Italian woman from Italy, and she wanted me to rep her jewelry, which was fucking amazing. I said I had it with me, the whole collection. So then Aaliyah saw, and she's like, oh, what is this? And I opened up the boxes, and she's like, oh, my God. Charlene, I need to wear this. I need to wear one of these pieces. And so that silver choker that she wears with the thing hanging here, that's mine. I own it. I have it. That was a moment that I was like, oh my God, I can't believe Aaliyah is wearing this necklace. Da, 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 da. But
is it the song Are You That Somebody?
Yeah.
I figured that was the one. That's 1998.
Yeah. So that was during the
because that came after One in a Million. I feel like One in a Million was one of her like first big ones.
Yeah. And then the last song that she did that she was filming on in Barbados or in the islands. I don't remember that song, but all my friends went to do that video. Wardrobe, hair, makeup. Eric, Christopher, both passed on the plane with her. I thought my best friend, Joe Legrand, he did her wardrobe. I thought he had passed. Carmeet from Pussycat Dolls.
Yes, she's so. I still see her out and about. She came to the Marco Marco show in New York.
Yeah. I remember that. But yeah. we go back from back in the day together before Pussycat Dolls. When I found out that Eric and Chris had passed, I was like, wow. And my friend Joe wasn't answering his phone, and I'm like, oh my god, oh my god. But then a few days later, he hit me up, and he's like, I'm still with us, and Carmeet too. I was like, oh. But
were you supposed to be on that plane?
Not me. All my friends were.
Oh, my God.
But the plane was 900 pounds overweight. So somebody got sued, I'm sure. But they shouldn't have done that. Like, you already have 8 people or 5 people on the plane, and you're going to throw in some luggage and sound equipment and shit.
Especially when you have, like, yeah, that's insane. You have a Leah on the plane. Like,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
So that happened, and that was a
how was that? Yeah, what was that like for you during that time?
It was really sad. I was stuck on the TV waiting for any kind of news. I cried a lot. It was really, one of those moments that you lost someone, and that you lost friends. Eric and Christopher, I grew up with, and they were her hair and makeup artists, and Joe. Joe, we're still best friends. Love him to death. And he's with us. So this is the first and only time that I think I will ever speak on my life, because I'm one of those artists that has always lived by my art speaks for me. I don't need to talk. I don't need to explain. But because we're in a new generation and everybody thinks I'm this and I'm that. Yeah. Because I am. I am the shit. I am the queen. And until somebody comes and takes my place, and I haven't even, I can't even say I've seen or heard or anybody coming to take my place. And I'm not saying as a drag queen, because I'm a performance artist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying as an artist itself. Like, I see a few girls that do out of this world, crazy Dracula type of stuff. Wonderful. Love it. I love that. But for me, I'm an original. Like, there's no other Kiki. There's nobody else. What I love about my Kiki mask is that it sifters through the good and the bad. If you have issues and you have problems, I'm going to see it. Because they'll either go like this. Oh, my God, you scare me. Okay, those are the people I want to stay away from. Then you get the people that are like, oh, you're amazing. Oh, my God, I love this. You are, those are the people that are full of love. I have people from Australia.
I just got the chills because that's so true. And I never even thought about it that way, but it's so true.
Yeah, and it keeps me away from the negativity. How many people have tried to pull my mask off at a club? All they get is thrown out, because I know security. I'm like, he touched me, get rid of him.
Yeah, he touched my face. That's assault. You can't touch it's you a, don't touch
you don't this you is do a, not do
a
that.
Public service announcement, don't ever touch Kiki's mask. In fact, never touch anyone's face. In fact, like, never kiss, like, if you see a queen or a performance artist or anyone out, we hope, don't kiss them either. Don't put your sweaty armpits all over them. Give air kisses. Give people the distance that they deserve.
Yeah, absolutely. And give me respect, honey. So that's
no,
what
that's
I
what I wanted this interview. I wanted people to like understand that there's so much, because I think about it, like if you're a new kid that just moved to WeHo, like no one knows your story. And because you were during a time where there wasn't social media, where you couldn't like post all of your accomplishments for the world to see, like all of your stuff's up here in your head. And I wanted you to just be able to get some of it out. And then you'll always have this, you know, to look back on.
Yeah. And
I'll play this for you when we're old in bed.
Okay. Me and my last breath. Oh my. And then I'll choke laughing and die.
All right, guys, this is the end of part one of my interview with Kiki Extravaganza. Please tune in next week to listen to part two, as you will not want to miss all the tea, the gossip, the celebrities that she's worked with, the story that she has lived. Tune in next week for part two of this episode.